Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I want to invite you to open up in Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5. Talk about the principle of being the salt of the earth this evening. You know, when Jesus preached the Sermon on the Mount, he began actually by mentioning several qualities that would be characteristics of citizens in the kingdom of heaven. And he dealt with these in what we typically refer to as the Beatitudes. And I want to take a moment just to read from that. He would say there, beginning in verse 3, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven," Jesus would say. And the person who is not characterized by those qualities that Jesus brought out there, that are described there in the Beatitudes, really just cannot be a disciple. It's not possible to be a disciple without having these characteristics and being committed to these characteristics. And when you read through these qualities that Jesus brings out here at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, none of them seem terribly impressive when measured from the standards of the world. In fact, they're not impressive at all when they're viewed from that particular standpoint. And what Jesus went on to do, however, is as he pointed out just how important these qualities and others, but these qualities are, and how important the people who possess these qualities are. And so he would say to people who were poor in spirit, and people who mourned, and people who were meek, and who hungered and thirsted after righteousness, he said, "You are the salt of the earth." And actually, if you're a Christian, the question isn't whether or not you're salt. The question is whether or not you're functioning as salt. And so I want to talk about a couple of principles. First, let's just talk about the significance of being salt this evening. It's interesting to me that Jesus would use such a common substance to teach a lesson about the effect that his followers would have in this world, or the effect that we should have in this world. You know, salt was something that was highly valued in the ancient world. You know, if salt is mentioned today, it's kind of a negative press. You can almost always count on it. But in the ancient world, it was a highly valued commodity. And of course, there would have been a house in all of the land that would have been without it. There was no way that these people, when Jesus said to them, "You are the salt of the earth," that they could have misunderstood what Jesus was trying to get across. Maybe it's a little bit more of a challenge for us, though. When we read that Jesus called his followers the salt of the earth, I'm not sure we have that natural understanding and that appreciation for what he meant. I said that salt was a highly valued commodity in the ancient world, and the truth is, that's really almost an understatement. There were times, for example, in the ancient world when the Roman government would pay its soldiers with salt, not entirely, but at least in part. In fact, our English word salary comes from the Latin word for salt. That's where we get it. And being paid in salt, something may not sound like a great benefit to us in our day and age, but people back then didn't really complain about it because they were receiving something that was valuable. Again, it was a valuable commodity. Salt was often used by people in the ancient Middle East to ratify agreements of some kind or covenants. And I've read that really they still do that sometimes even to this day. Salt symbolized the things like fidelity and constancy to people in ancient times. You can even read about that in the Old Testament. Passages like Numbers chapter 18 and verse 19 talks about a covenant of salt. It was something that they did in the midst of their agreements. They used it to ratify that. It was used also in many of the sacrifices that we read about in the Old Testament. It's never featured by itself, but it was mixed in with some of the other things like the grain offering and the burnt offering and the offering of incense. Part of those sacrifices included salt. Now, let me tell you why salt was this valuable in the ancient world. It was valuable because of its ability to hold back decay. That's it. And the reason it had that kind of value in that society stems solely from the fact that it was a preservative. If it didn't possess those antiseptic qualities, it wouldn't have been considered valuable enough to be used for any of these other purposes. It had no other true purpose other than to hold back that decay or to preserve things, to keep it from decay. And so salt was important in the ancient world for that reason. And I want you to keep in mind that when you talk about things that took place in the first century, there were no refrigeration systems in the ancient world. And so, for example, if you place it in the area around Judea and Samaria and Galilee and all of that, the promised land, if you caught some fish, for example, on the Sea of Galilee and you wanted to take those to market somewhere, you wouldn't just put them on ice or something like that. You would have used salt to preserve them. And Jesus, among his followers, you have Peter and you have Andrew and you have James and you have John. And certainly they would have been familiar with that process. They would have understood what Jesus meant when he talked about this. They were fishermen before they were ever preachers and apostles. But the truth is, really everybody would have understood that principle. It was just a part of life in the ancient world. Every house in the land would have already had salt available for the reasons that we've talked about. Just like every house in our society today has a refrigerator. You won't find one without that. And so Jesus used this very common substance in order to teach this very important lesson. And it was that ability to fight decay that caused Jesus to use salt as a metaphor to describe his disciples. You see, ever since sin entered the world, dealing with decay has just been a part of life. It's just from the, not practically from the beginning until now. And whether we're talking about physically or morally, that has been the case. And just as salt was used to hold back decay in the physical realm, again, that's the reason Jesus used this. What he's telling his disciples is that you are what holds back decay in the moral realm. That's the purpose that you serve. Have you ever thought about how significant it was for Jesus to say about us as his disciples, you are the salt of the earth? One thing that's implied in the words of Jesus is that this world has a problem with moral corruption. This world has a problem with moral decay. And I think that's implied in his words. And I wouldn't be surprised if you have noticed that already. All you have to do is look at what is said in other places in the Bible, and you are presented with example after example of that principle taking place, of the moral corruption and the moral decay that was so prevalent all throughout history. Or just look at the world in which we live, and we see it all around us. We see the moral corruption that is so prevalent in our own day. The world has a problem with that. We understand that principle. The Apostle Peter in 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 4 would talk about it. He would use that language even. He talked about the corruption that is in the world because of evil desire. Again, he's talking about a moral principle there. And so when people follow their evil desires rather than following the will of God, the result is always the same. It is always corruption. It is always decay. It's always a breakdown of the way things ought to be. And can anybody deny that we're seeing the result of that all around us in our society today? People are encouraged to do what they want to do. Just live life your way. Do things as you want to do. Regardless of how morally corrupt the behavior is, people are encouraged just to do whatever. And the truth is, we can't afford to be unconcerned about that for a number of different reasons, not the least of which is the consequences for these people who are being corrupted. The Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 18 talked about the fact that there are people who are, as he worded it, people who are perishing. And the word that Paul used there in the translation I'm reading from is also translated in other places as lost. People are being lost. They are perishing as a result of the corruption that is in the world. And truth is, as disciples of Jesus Christ, we ought to be very concerned about that. And yet something else that is implied in the words of Jesus is that this world is in desperate need of what his followers provide. Isn't that true? There's corruption in this world, and what they need is what we can provide. That's what Jesus was getting at when he says there in Matthew 5 and verse 13 that you are the salt of the earth. How often have you thought about the fact that you, just because you are a follower of Jesus, that you serve to hold back the corruption and the decay that is in this world? How often do you take that into consideration? When was the last time you thought about the significance of your life in those particular terms? How seriously do we take that responsibility? You see, if we demonstrate these qualities that Jesus talked about, that we read beginning in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 3, and the other qualities that Jesus would go on to talk about in the Sermon on the Mount, if we're the people that he wants us to be, I'll just go ahead and tell you, in part, we're going to be hated by the world in which we live. Jesus will talk about that. At the end of the Beatitudes, Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. You are the salt of the earth. That's the order in which all of that is stated. There are going to be people who don't like it when we function in this capacity. But what I want us to understand this evening is that there will also be some people, if we live the way the Lord wants us to live, who will be impacted by the way that we live. And as we talked about a little bit even this morning, we don't know the response that we'll get to the things that we do. We don't know what kind of impact we might have upon people's lives. And that's one of the reasons, at least, why we need to be committed to living the way the Lord wants us to live. You never know whose life you might impact by living as a disciple of Jesus. But there's something else I want us to look at, and that is the seriousness of being salt. You know, Jesus warned about the need to take our identity as his disciples seriously. And one of the ways he does that in this verse, after he says, "You are the salt of the earth," he goes on to say, "But if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored?" And then he says, "It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet." And what that is a warning not to let our influence diminish. That's what it is. If you know anything about the compound sodium chloride, you recognize that, technically speaking, it's not possible for salt to lose its taste. I mean, it just can't do that. Salt is salt. But to understand what Jesus was talking about here in Matthew chapter 5, we need to keep in mind that what people in ancient times referred to as salt wasn't necessarily pure sodium chloride. There were no refineries in the ancient world that would take out, you know, all the extra stuff, and then you just come up with just the pure stuff. What people in those days called salt was a white powder. It was often gathered from around the Dead Sea. And yes, it contains sodium chloride, but is also mixed with a number of other things as well. So for them, salt wasn't pure salt like we have. And it's been suggested that sodium chloride would have been one of the more soluble components in that mixture, and which meant that it was the easiest to wash out. And what you would have there is that, you know, if there was rain or something along that line, there might be a residue that was left behind in it, and it looked white and it looked like salt, and it was still called salt by the people of that day, but it didn't taste like it and it didn't function like it. It didn't provide the flavor and it didn't hold back the corruption any longer. It was in fact useless. It was no longer good for anything but to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. Now, implied in the words of Jesus is the fact that we can lose our effectiveness. Isn't that implied in what he said? We can cease to have the kind of impact that the Lord intends for us to have in this world, and we can lose it by simply failing to maintain that distinctiveness. Those qualities that make us different, those qualities that hold back the corruption, so to speak, that keep back the moral decay. And sometimes that happens when people are influenced by the world rather than influencing the world. We see that more times than we care to admit in the lives of Christians who give in and they become worldly in their thinking and in the things that they do. And that is a great tragedy. Rather than influencing the world by being different, too many Christians adopt the world's standards and become a corrupting influence more than a preserving influence. And certainly that's sad. I wish I could say it never happens, but we know it does. And of course, Jesus recognized that danger, and that's why he prayed for his disciples in John chapter 17 and verse 15. And he would say about them, "I do not ask you to take them out of the world, but that you keep them from the evil one. Keep them separate. Keep them set apart. Make them holy. Let them be different, because that's the only way this is going to work." He knew that they were needed in this world, but that there were also certain dangers that were involved in being a part of what's all around us. But I'll just tell you, there are other times, even when we don't just go headlong into immorality and worldliness, where we still fail to maintain our distinctiveness, maybe not in a direct way where the world influences us in that fashion, but maybe in a little more indirect way. And what I mean by that is that some Christians would never allow the world to determine their behavior, but they're not going to influence the world, you know, either. They're not going to have an impact on the way other people live their lives or have an influence for good. It's as if there are a lot of disciples of Christ who want to be secret disciples of Christ. You know, yes, I want to be godly and I want to live the way that I'm supposed to live. I just don't want anybody to ever notice that. I don't want them to see that in me. I don't want the burden and all of the things that come along. As we read a little bit ago, there are going to be people who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. And there are going to be others who revile and persecute those who act that way. And they're going to utter all kinds of evil against those who are disciples of Jesus. And the reality is, I just don't want to deal with that. But can I tell you that Jesus really didn't give us another option along those lines? That if we're going to be one of his disciples, he said, this is how it goes. This is part of the territory. This is what you signed up for. You are the salt of the earth. And so I want to ask you a question tonight. If we're not having an impact on this world, then what purpose do we really serve in light of what Jesus said? I think we need to come to terms with the fact that we are here, we are in this world, at least in part, to have an impact upon the world in which we live. What other purpose do disciples of Jesus have? And the reality is, if we're not doing that, and if we don't embrace that, then we're failing to do what the Lord wanted his people to do in the first place. We need to see that we're not here solely to look out for our own interests or to just, have a generally pleasant life that, yes, includes some aspects of discipleship. That's not really it. I came across a book a while back. I thought it was interesting, the title. And it's written, to Christians. And the title was, "It's Not About You." And I haven't read the book, but I'll just go ahead and tell you, sometimes I think we might need that particular point. That we're not in this world. We haven't been put in the positions that we are in. We don't live in this world with just a soul view to what I want out of life. That's not it. Amen. I think we would do well to remember that fact. We're not here to accomplish what we want to accomplish or to do things that make us feel comfortable. We are here to be the salt of the earth. That's why we're here. And one thing the Lord wants for us is to influence the world and to influence it in the right way, to hold back the corruption that is in the world that seems to be getting ever more rotten by the day. And the truth is, I suppose there's never been a time when the world didn't need that kind of influence. You can go back as far as you want to go back, and it did. But the reality is, I can't think of a time in history when this particular aspect of what it means to be a disciple was more needed than right now. Can you? Are we committed as Christians to having the effect that the Lord wants us to have on the world in which we live? Or have we come to the point where we are content to live our lives not in a way that's ungodly, but that is really nonetheless, to borrow the language of Jesus, useless? It doesn't have an impact. Is it our desire to influence the people of this world, or are we merely content to blend into the crowd and leave the corruption unchecked? As we bring things to a close this evening, I want to ask you a couple of questions. We pretty much covered the basics of this, but I want to be sure that these points are made. A couple of questions. Do you recognize your value as a Christian? When you think of the fact that you're the salt of the earth, here's what I want you not to do. I don't want you to think in terms of a big blue cylinder of Morton salt in your pantry at home. That's, typically how we think of it. I don't know if you've ever looked at the packaging or not, but there's a picture of a girl with an umbrella in one hand, and she's holding a container of salt in the other arm. And the way she's holding it, salt is just kind of pouring out the back. And you kind of get the impression by that, this is not real valuable stuff. I mean, it's okay if it just spills out along the way, no big deal. It's not really all that valuable. But when Jesus said, "You are the salt of the earth," again, he was thinking of a substance that was valuable enough to be used as payment instead of money. It was important enough to be used to ratify a covenant or an agreement. It was significant enough to be used in the sacrifices that were made to the God who created heaven and earth. It was the most effective method of holding back decay in the ancient world. That's how valuable you are as a Christian. But the second question is this: do you embrace the responsibility that comes with that? You ever notice that it's just easier to be good in the presence of some people? Of course, the reverse of that is also true, isn't it? It's easy to be evil in the presence of some people. And what I want us to see is that by what we do and by what we say, we are either making it easier for people to be good or to be evil, one or the other. When they look at your life, does it make people want to do better? I believe Jesus had that kind of thing in mind in our passage, at least in part. And I don't believe we'll be the salt of the earth by accident. That's not how that works. In part, we may be the salt of the earth just by living like we should. That's going to be part of the process. But I also can't help but think that we'll only be the salt of the earth truly if we are determined to have an impact on the world in which we live. Is that your determination? Is that what you live for? Is that your aim as a disciple of Jesus, to be someone who holds back the corruption that's in the world? You know, as I've studied for this lesson, it's given me a renewed perspective of what it means to be a Christian. And I think that's why Jesus spoke those words in the Sermon on the Mount. And I hope that as we've talked tonight, it's done maybe the same thing for you. We serve an important function in this world, and it's one which this world desperately needs. And the great question for me and for you is, will we accept that challenge? Will we be the people the Lord wants us to be as his disciples? We may have some of the audience tonight who are not disciples of Jesus, and if so, we want to encourage you to become one tonight. You know, Jesus taught the apostles that they were to go into the world, and they were to make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. That's how a disciple is made. A person responds to the gospel of Jesus Christ. They're baptized for the forgiveness of their sins. If you've never done that, we want to encourage you to do that tonight. And if you are a disciple, if you are the salt of the earth, again, a Christian is the salt of the earth. There's no question about that, but you've not been functioning as salt. Make the changes that are necessary. Be the kind of person who will hold back the decay, who will rid the world of the corruption, who has the kind of impact and the kind of influence that the Lord intended when he called us to belong to him. If we can help you tonight, we ask that you come as we stand and as we sing.